Hi, welcome to Dave Lee on Investing. We have another live show. Feel free to join in the live chat. Today we're going to be talking about Tesla's plans to reopen their Fremont factory and all the drama that surrounds that. And so we also are going to take some viewer questions and talk about a lot of investing topics. So I hope you have a good time, and this is going to be another great episode. All right, as many of you guys know, yesterday you had the governor of California. He was tweeting out that finally California has released some specific guidance, and starting today, places like clothing stores, bookstores, florists, sporting goods stores, etc., can open, along with manufacturing and logistics. And so the governor is giving some guidelines that it appears that Tesla can open their Fremont factory. And so Elon Musk replied to this tweet, to the governor's tweet, and he said, yay, right? And then shortly after that, Elon went ahead and emailed Tesla employees. So here's a CNBC article, and it says that Elon Musk sent an email last night saying that they will try to start production at Fremont this afternoon. And then their head of HR, human resources, they're planning to bring back 30% of the employees starting today. More specifically, they cited kind of Elon's email specifically, and he said, in light of Governor Newsom's statement earlier today, we will aim to restart production at Fremont tomorrow or today afternoon. This is Elon Musk's email. He says, I will be on the line personally helping wherever I can. However, if you feel uncomfortable coming back to work at this time, please do not feel obligated to do so. These are difficult times, so thanks for so much for working hard to make Tesla successful. Now, here's the tension. The tension with this whole thing is that the governor of California can make certain, you know, guidelines or orders, but because it's more of a health issue, with health issues, it defers to the county level or the local level. And so in this case, the Fremont factory is part of Alameda County, which is a county in Northern California in the Bay Area, home to about 1.6 to 1.7 million people. And the whole Bay Area in Northern California is taking a very, very kind of cautious approach. They have one of the most stringent shelter-in-place orders across the country. And so, so I was telling people yesterday that Alameda County was going to have a town hall Zoom meeting today at 12 p.m. to give an update. And so I was encouraging people, hey, you guys should ask about Tesla during this meeting. So during this meeting today, just a couple hours ago, Tesla came up in the town hall meeting. And here we have Rob from Tesla Daily. He was sharing that the interim health officer, Erica Pan, in response to a question about Tesla's production status, says, we have not given the green light to Tesla to start their production. And then he goes on to say, we anticipate over the next week that people can really start thinking and planning for that next step. And so what the local Alameda County Health Officer, Erica Pan, is saying that, wait a minute, Tesla shouldn't start production now, and that they should wait till next week, and so we can start talking about it. So if you already notice, like, the language here, it's very, very cautionary language. It's like, let's start talking about how to plan for the next step. So it's not even, let's start talking about when to open. It's like, let's start talking about planning to open, right? And so you see Alameda County and the whole Bay Area taking very, very cautious steps here. I warned about this, actually, back in March, when Tesla first had to, you know, shut down the factory. I'm like, hey, this is not good news, because the whole Bay Area and Alameda County could go ahead and just be super cautious and continue to extend this shelter-in-place order. And this is kind of what's happening in this case. Now, for those who aren't familiar kind of with Northern California, I happen to grow up in Northern California, home of like Silicon Valley. I went to school, I went to college in Northern California. And there tends to be a certain type of thought out there that I think also promotes kind of the ultra cautious approach to this whole thing. And some of it tends to be, I mean, it's a little bit, you know, perhaps a little bit more liberal bent, but a little bit more intellectual. There's a lot of institutions that are Stanford, they're Berkeley, etc. up there. And I think a lot of the culture up there is influencing people to take extra cautionary kind of measures, right? And I think Tesla is getting impacted as a result of all of this. And so you have, I went ahead and went to Alameda County's website and I pulled up what's the situation of coronavirus in Alameda County. Is it that serious? Are they overreacting or are they just, you know, being ultra cautious? So here's the hospitalizations in Alameda County. And if you notice, here's the total number of people hospitalized for COVID, and it's already kind of trending down, right? And the people in ICU is like trending down as well. And so you already have a kind of a trending down situation with hospitalizations. And so it seems like with Alameda, you don't have an escalating situation. It's just more of a cautionary. They just don't want, right, another outbreak to happen. All right, here is the Alameda daily cases. And if you see the number of daily cases, it's kind of like slightly going down over time. And so again, we're not seeing a big outbreak, right? That I think would kind of justify kind of extra stringent, like, you know, extensions of the order. Rather, we're seeing kind of a leveling off. Now, we're not seeing kind of like this complete leveling off, right? Like down to near zero, which some of us have hoped for. But I mean, in that case, it would have been probably an easier decision to just lift the extensions quickly. All right, you see today Tesla closed at $8.19. You saw Tesla go up $40. I think part of it was, yeah, people are wondering, is Tesla going to open up their Tesla factory? And even after news that Tesla, that the Alameda County officials are against this, still Tesla was able to kind of hold their position here. All right, so what do we make out of this, right? I think we're going to see some more drama in this situation. I think Alameda County and the Bay Area is not going to just get pushed over lightly. These guys are very kind of like ideological, you know, people up there in the Bay Area. And I think they're really going to push hard, right, probably to get Tesla to rein back their production. I think in Tesla's case, they can point to the California governor's statement and also, you know, opening up and manufacturing across the state. They can also point to the federal level where, you know, the federal government is encouraging opening up. And I think Tesla can try to push for a case where, hey, let's get minimum kind of like, you know, 25 to 30, 40% production. Let's do a 1/3 of our kind of like workforce back in the factory for the next week or two. And during that time of kind of a minimal production, let's go ahead and talk about how we can raise that production, bring back our, you know, greater workforce with perhaps more precautionary measures, and they can do that together with the county. I think that's probably the best case scenario. If Alameda plays hardball, you could see Tesla postpone, right, the opening of the factory for another week or perhaps 2 weeks, and who knows, you know, how much longer this could go on. All right, in other news, you had Tesla gained another kind of battery cell patent with something called a tabless electrode, and Elon Musk replied to this tweet and he's saying that, hey, this is way more important than it sounds. If you've kind of like, you know, gone through this, it's kind of complicated, a lot of this battery technology. From what I understand is that every battery needs kind of like a cathode tab and an anode tab, and then the electrons need to go through that tab, and it just takes extra material and it's very inefficient. And so Tesla's found a way to kind of remove those tabs. It removes kind of the complexity, right, of manufacturing to include those parts, and also they're able to gain different features like density and also perhaps even discharge, you know, charge rates even to make the battery even better. And I think what people are not realizing, I think, in the bigger picture is, I think a lot of times it's easy to get focused on these minute kind of battery patents or battery details. But I think the bigger picture is that Tesla is entering a virtuous cycle in terms of energy and battery development. And here's kind of the virtuous cycle here. So you have Tesla, they're selling more EVs and energy products, right? And right now there isn't really, you know, another manufacturer that's selling electric vehicles at scale. And so Tesla's pretty much, you know, the only manufacturer. And in a sense, and I would go to a certain level where I wouldn't call it per se a complete monopoly, but I would say that, you know, Tesla does have, you know, kind of the vast amount of of market share, mind share, right, at least in the US and other kind of developed countries regarding EVs. And so this is a great first step. Now, the second step is that by selling more vehicle, electric vehicles and energy products, they're able to get more revenue and more gross profit. With that gross profit now, they can spend more money to invest in research and development. What does this mean? This means hiring more of the best battery experts. That means they can acquire, right, battery startups. They can acquire like production equipment manufacturers. They could, you know, just make offers to institutions to partner with them. And all of this money spent now is spent into increasing, right, and making better their energy products and their batteries. Now, with all the improvements that the R&D is giving, they can start implementing those improvements for big cost savings. Now, the reason why these are big cost savings is because you've got kind of like small improvements, but you have mass scale, right? Meaning that you're selling hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these electric vehicles and perhaps energy products. And so even small improvements allow you to make it, it's worth it to implement those improvements because you're getting, you know, mass savings on scale. Now, after that, with those savings, they can now pass those savings on and they can lower the cost of the vehicle, or they can increase gross margin, and they can also improve the specs of the vehicles and their energy products. For example, you can have faster charge times, you can have longer life, right? A 1,000,000-mile battery. You can improve capacity of the battery, right? Density of the battery. And with a lower kind of cost vehicle and with better features, now you can sell more vehicles and energy products. So here we have the virtuous cycle. Is you go from 1 to 5, right? And then you restart again from 1 to 5, meaning all of these efforts that you've put into, you know, improving your battery cost now is helping you to restart the cycle to sell more vehicles. Now, so far, Tesla, in my opinion, is the only kind of like mass EV vehicle or mass auto OEM that is actually, you know, taking advantage of this virtuous cycle right now. I mean, you might have some, you know, perhaps some Chinese, you know, automaker like BYD or something that could be doing something similar in some ways. But I think for as far as we know, as far as I'm concerned, Tesla is, you know, deeply involved in this virtuous cycle, right, for batteries. And this is perhaps one of the most bullish things you can think of for the next 5 or 10 years. Think about Tesla in 5 years, think about Tesla in 10 years, right? How many millions of cars they're gonna be able to spend or sell, how many billions of dollars they're able to put back into battery R&D, and what kind of improvements they're able to roll out. And this is why it becomes kind of like a difficult journey for other auto OEMs. Right, they don't have this virtuous cycle, and so they're now having to rely on partners like LG or Samsung or, you know, different, you know, battery manufacturers. But that's gonna, in a way, it's difficult because they have to share margins now, right? And so these battery makers are making money, and then these automakers are now left with just, you know, the crumbs in terms of gross margin, and it's like a competition between those two. It's very difficult. All right. In other news, today is May 8th, right, 2020. This is actually, I will never forget, I think, May 8th. You know, besides it's a very important birthday in my life, not my own, but someone else that I care for deeply. But besides that, this was what I call the great Tesla TSLA turnaround, May 8th, 2013. If you have to know any day in history of Tesla, this is one of the most important days. This is the time when you had Tesla right here, it gapped up. And you had this huge run that Tesla went up to basically 180, right? And before that, Tesla was hanging out, right, in the $30 to $50 range. And it was this May 8th earnings report, Q1, where Tesla delivered a surprise GAAP and non-GAAP profit, right? And they totally blew people away from with their demand for the Model S vehicles, and it completely kind of like crushed the story that Tesla was going to be doomed and bankrupt, right? And all of the shorts just were completely floored by this May 8th, 2013 turnaround. This is a kind of a closer look at this chart here. In the weeks preceding this May 8th, Tesla was trading between $40 and $60. It was just the last week or so, it kind of inched up to $60. But before this, Tesla was trading under $40, right? $40 and lower. And it was with this gap up that, I remember telling my wife on May 8th, Yeah, it was like, wow, man, it's like this stock is gonna jump. This stock is just gonna go up because people, this earnings is just the major shocker. And so we were able to get in right here the morning after and buy like long-term options, right, on Tesla in addition to our stock position because we're like, wow, this is just like an amazing opportunity. All right. Finally, in other news, we had Elon Musk on the Joe Rogan show. You can go to YouTube, type in Elon Musk, Joe Rogan. You can see his interview. It's a 2-hour interview. And I was kind of disappointed a little bit in the quality or the depth of the interview, right? I mean, sure, Joe Rogan and Elon Musk are going to say, you know, some interesting things here and there. However, I kind of felt like the whole first hour they were talking about Neuralink, right? And the whole kind of concept of Neuralink. And I felt like perhaps one of the biggest themes that was missing in the whole discussion was more of kind of like the ethical slash, not just ethical, but kind of like a different angle, right? A different view. And if you are part of my channel, you'll know that the main ethos and kind of whole purpose of this channel is to promote deeper thinking from different angles, right? Not just to accept the status quo, not just to accept what anyone's saying, even what I'm saying right now. And when I listen to an interview like this, and we're talking about the future, we're talking about symbiosis with AI, right? We're talking about implants. I feel like you owe kind of the audience some discussion about the other side. What happens when this stuff actually, you know, what are the harm or the implications, right? Not just good, but also negative of this. And I think one thing is like, sure, we can say that, hey, this could help people, right? Think faster, do more things. But hey, what are the risks that this could be used against people, right? To actually like, Elon's like, oh, people won't be forced to use it, but hey, is that really going to be true in all countries, right? And could it somehow be forced, right, on people in certain ways? Like you think, wait, it's never going to be forced on us, but wait a minute, look at China, look at North Korea, look at some other countries, right? The freedoms that we assume, right, that people have, maybe it's not how it is across the world. And you think the world today is going to be like similar 20, 30 years ago, but maybe it's different, right? Maybe the whole individual liberties that we've been experiencing over the past 50, 100 years, maybe they're at risk. Maybe we're, you know, opening up some type of can of worms. The second thing is with technology, and you increase the power of technology, you increase productivity, you increase, right, what people can do. And there's a mass amount of benefit, right? I'm not minimizing that, right? We have a mass amount of like economic development, you have a mass amount of quality of life improvement, mass amount of like age improvement, health improvement, etc. The list goes on. However, one of the questions is like, what are we doing to really solve the human heart issue, right? Like, are people like less evil now than they are 100 years ago, right? And if you look at history and the wars of history and the evils in history, this is a constant theme through thousands and thousands of years. And does this really address the human heart condition at all? And if it doesn't, and we're not able to, let's say, solve, you know, the problem of evil, what does this mean, right? And you put this in the hands of people that you might assume, like ideally, that, oh, everyone's going to use it for good, but that's a big assumption, in my opinion. Another theme that I feel like, you know, people need to be talking about, especially with these topics, and I feel like they're being glossed over. It's a shallow discussion. I'd love to see more people, you know, dive deeper and question, you know, people and Elon and others, you know, on this is, hey, what is the end of tech, right? With technology, is it really 100% guaranteed that this improves lives? Is like what scenarios is it that you have the end of tech actually contributing to, let's say, perhaps the end of society as whole? You might like take another example about nuclear weapons, right? You go, oh, nuclear power is fantastic, but then you make it into a weapon, and like who's going to say like nuclear weapons are fantastic, right? They're not, right? But then you put nuclear weapons in the hands of some evil people, and then other people might be forced to take on nuclear weapons. And so there's a lot of ethical questions with this. And I think AI is a huge amount of power, right? And in a lot of ways, I think AI is more powerful than nuclear weapons. And I think some of these issues and topics aren't really being discussed. And I'd like to just, you know, open that up for discussion. I'm not going to give any conclusive ideas right now, but I think the questioning actually helps people to think broader. All right. Another question that my wife was asking, was she wasn't asking, she was kind of like irritated yesterday because she saw a Square. They reported earnings and they had a gap up, and they're going up after earnings. They closed today at $76, and she was like, "Dave, man, we should have got in more, right?" And I was like, "Oh, I know, but you know, I'm comfortable with, you know, the small position we do have, and I've got to kind of trust the process. I've got to trust the process that as I research and get more comfortable with more companies, then, you know, I can spot opportunities better." And I've been honest and transparent here with all of you guys here, saying that, hey, I don't know much about Square, right? I'm a beginner in Square. I have a small position in Square, and I want to share what I'm sharing because I want to bring you along the journey and how I research, how I uncover, right, companies to invest in, right? And I feel like that's probably more important to share the process than it is to take 3 months of research and then come on this channel and say, hey, I figured everything out, right? Here is the next great, you know, stock. And yeah, I mean, my wife would love for me to do that so we can acquire our position during those 3 months of quietness before like releasing kind of our findings and our conclusions. But in my opinion, I think it's much more of a worthy, you know, fulfilling endeavor to bring people along and say, hey, I'm not going to give you guys a buy sell recommendation here. I'm just going to go through the process of how we think through, right, certain investments, how we analyze certain companies. And I was telling my wife, hey, if you feel like we missed out, hey, you know, that's not the case, right? There's always opportunities, and the opportunities are waiting for those who have the right thinking, the right research, right process, and are able to uncover value. And I think yeah, that's the positive thing. All right, I'm going to go ahead and open up for questions. So if you have a question, if you can go ahead and preface the question, type all caps question colon and write your question. If you've asked a question previously in this live chat right now, go ahead and re-ask it, because I haven't been following the live chat as I'm sharing, because, you know, it's hard to go back and forth. One comment on a recent video was saying that he just watched this video again, and after being wowed in June 2019 during my Tesla research the first time, so many truth bombs here is humbling. Yeah, this was this video I did with Andrea James several years ago, actually, and she was a Tesla analyst, and she was probably one of the most clear-headed, kind of bullish Tesla analysts on the street. And this interview was about an hour long or even longer, and it kind of really gave a great insight into the analyst world, but also into Tesla back in the day. And if you haven't watched it, I encourage you to watch it. This is one of those must-see videos, right, for Tesla investors. And when I think about this video, and I think about kind of like back in the day, 2013 or 2014 or even, you know, whenever, I think about the difference of timing. You know, there's a huge amount of difference of getting in with a stock at $30 versus getting in a stock at $70, right? And yeah, I'll just give you an example. This, I'm not going to share my exact holdings because my wife isn't comfortable with me sharing my exact holdings. But let's say hypothetically, right, you had $300,000 to invest. And at $30, right, you could get 10,000 shares. Right, this is back in 2013, right? But if you missed kind of it, or you just was, I wouldn't say lazy, but just didn't have the opportunity to research, or you caught, right, Tesla late in understanding the potential and all this stuff, and you caught it at $200, right? And you have $300,000. Now you're looking at 1,500 shares, right? So that's the difference of timing, right? Just like miss it a few months, and you go from having 10,000 shares to having 1,500 shares, right? That's a mega amount of difference. Let's say hypothetically, Tesla is at $1,000 per share. If you have 10,000 shares, that's $10 million, right? But if you have 1,500 shares, whoops, that's $1.5 million, right? Now, I'm not going to say $1.5 million is chump change, but like compared to $10 million, that's significantly different, right? And it was the same amount of money, right? $300,000 that you invested. It just was a different time, right? And so the impact of timing is just is amazing, right? It's amazing in investments, like what a few months can do. And that's something that, yeah, I'm constantly remembering when I think about these old days. All right, we got a bunch of questions here. Hi, Dave. When do we get to meet your wife? I love hearing your stories about her. Yeah, I mean, I'll ask her if she wants to come on. Actually, we would do a great show together. She's actually very, very clear, very, very smart. And she's been part of this whole journey. And she's one of the reasons why, you know, I have this channel, because a lot of the stuff I share because I want her to know, right, certain things, right? Like, I was debating about, like, this past week, whether to talk about Square or not, but I'm like, hey, my wife needs to know what I'm thinking about Square, so she could, you know, think about it and make her own, you know, decisions, have some thoughts, we can discuss it. And so that's part of the whole reason why, you know, I had this channel, is because she's also interested in stuff like this. Jim Reed, are you on the payroll of Tesla? No, if you follow me over the years, go to teslamotors.com. Actually, in my video description, you'll see a link to my Tesla Motors Club post, and it goes back from 2012, right, all the way. And you have thousands and thousands of posts, and you look through those posts, you'll see that oftentimes I am critical, I'm very critical actually of different things that Tesla might have done in the past, and you'll see that very clearly. All right, Samuel says, how much is small? What is a small position? Yeah, I mean, it's all relative, right? Like, yeah, to some people, a few $1,000 is small, or a few hundred. To some other people, like a few million is small, or even like a few hundred million. It all depends, like, on the cycle. So, all right, Truja says, what do you think of NASDAQ being at late January levels, almost all-time highs? Second crash coming. Personally, I find it ridiculous. Can't be this good. Yeah, I actually have some different views on this. Like, I understand what's going on, because on one side, you have the Fed, you know, putting in liquidity. These companies aren't falling as far as they can, because they're getting access to loans. They're getting access to liquidity to save their businesses. And so you don't have that kind of, like, downfall that just crashes it completely. And so the Fed is providing a backstop, you know, really taking these loans, right, of this debt of company and really, you know, insuring it in a sense. And so, and there's also limited opportunities, I think, with the bond market being kind of not very attractive going forward. Real estate looks very shaky kind of next few years. So you have equities as, you know, possibly one of the only areas where you see some possible appreciation. Not all equities, but probably, you know, some of the best companies out there. On the flip side, on the negative side, what I personally see is, you know, I see some risk for a debt crisis happening across other countries. And I think the U.S. tends to be in a stronger position because they're the printer of the dollar. But we're looking at other countries who have less, let's go ahead and talk about some of this stuff here. So you have other countries that have, like, you have the virus situation, actually. And then that leads to less economic activity. And then that leads to less tax revenue. But you also have an increase in spending, because the government needs to basically pay people to, you know, stay afloat. And so you have this double whammy of decreased tax revenue. It could be, you know, 30 to 50% decreased tax revenue, even more. Right, of going down, and then you have this increase of spending. It could be like 30 to 50% or even more of increased spending. And now you have, what's left is you have these huge government deficits, right? All right, now with these huge government deficits, they have to start repaying, and then you have these deficits leading to more debt. Now the problem is, with these huge government deficits, basically these local government or these governments across the country, their revenue is going down, but their expenses are increasing. They're taking on more debt, and now their credit basically is getting put into question. Like, when are these companies ever going to pay back their debt? And so now you're going to have some countries, I think quite a few. If you think about it, a lot of these countries are really tourist dependent. Let's say smaller countries, like take the Caribbean or take, like, you know, certain there's a lot of countries really dependent on travel, smaller countries, they're going to be hit hard with this whole economic activity. Their tax revenues are going to go crashing down. Debt's going to be increasing. There's a lot of countries that I think are going to be struggling in the next year and a half with debt. And this could really kind of spiral and enter into some type of I don't know what kind of crisis exactly. What are the percentage of this? Now, here's the tricky part, is that this all this stuff is not guaranteed. It's not 100% positive that, you know, there's going to be an international type of debt crisis across many countries. It could be only a 5% probability, or it could be a 30 to 40% probability. And these probabilities can change over time depending on how the virus situation changes, how the virus situation like progresses, and how economic rebound happens. And so all of this stuff is important to keep track week by week, right? Figuring out what's going on, what are the risks at hand. And so, yeah, I think in terms of, you know, second crash coming, I think, yeah, there's definitely a possibility. And that's actually one of the reasons why I have the most cash on hand than I've ever had before, like in my entire life right now. Because, yeah, I do think, you know, there's some optionality when you hold cash, right? There's more things you could do. I just think it's wise in a lot of ways. Marty T says, will you get into SpaceX? Yeah, I had an opportunity actually this past week. I almost got into SpaceX. Through one of those, like, you know, companies that hold a special purpose vehicle. Suppose, I guess, SpaceX is raising funds at the same valuation. I passed on it because I feel like I want to have some more cash on hand for what could be some possible, you know, more mess coming up in the next year or so. I want to have that more optionality. But, you know, yeah, I do hope that I can get into SpaceX or at least Starlink, hopefully with the IPO. Do you think Tesla can strive in a recession depression? Yeah, I mean, I think Tesla is probably going to be one of the only auto companies to survive and thrive in auto. I won't say survive, but thrive in a recession. I think the biggest reason is the Model 3, Model Y, right? It's a new car. You know, there's a lot of pent up demand, and Tesla's international. So I think with the Model Y, you're going to see Tesla being able to grow their deliveries year over year. Now, are they going to be able to grow it as fast as, you know, they could have done without the recession? Probably not, right? So they're going to be hit some, but Tesla, I think, is in much better shape than any other car company. All right, Hugh says, would Tesla make full self-driving become owned by owner and not the car? Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I guess if you have it owned by the owner, I guess you could switch cars and just continue your full self-driving. I would imagine not so. You know, I would imagine it would be tied to the car. That kind of seems like the same thing. All right, Jake P, what is a short call option? Is it the same as shorting a stock? All right, so shorting a stock is basically when you need to you borrow, right, shares, and then you sell them in the market, and then later on you have to buy those shares out to close your position, and you're hoping to buy those shares at a lower cost, right? And then you pocket the difference. That's shorting, right, stock. Now, a short call option is a call option is you have some price in the future. And you have the option, right, to exercise that option to buy stock at a certain price. What a short call means, I'm guessing you're implying to sell, right, a call option. So let's say Tesla is at $800 today, and you sell a call option for $1,000 next week. That means that the other person you sell it to has the option to buy Tesla for $1,000 next week, and they give you a small amount, right, to have that option. And so you sell them that option contract, let's say, because you don't think it's going to hit $1,000, and you pocket that difference, right? That's kind of like writing a covered call, as people would say. So it's very different than shorting a stock, right? Writing a covered call. You can also buy a put, which is the option to sell, right, your Tesla stock at a certain price at a certain date. We can go into options more. I have different stories on options over time. Options are definitely fascinating to look into. All right, Marty T says, do you see a second crash in the stock market? Yeah, again, I don't think it's a binary thing. I don't think it's 100% yes or 100% no. I think those who say that, I don't know how clear-headed they are. I think, yeah, it's interesting, the Warren Buffett, I've been thinking about, you know, I watched a bunch of his like shareholder meeting last weekend, and to see him not buy anything, like even Apple, like, he is in love with Apple. If you see Warren Buffett, and yet when Apple went under 250 and even down to like 225 or so, Warren Buffett was not buying even his favorite company in the whole world. Right? He thinks Apple is the strongest company, and for it to go from like 320 all the way to 225 and Warren Buffett to not be buying, I think it shows that Warren Buffett is actually thinking there's a good probability or possibility that we're going to see kind of an extended economic turndown that could lead to more problems in the future. All right, Oyin says $7 billion in USD cash. That's what Tesla reported. What does that mean? Is that actual cash stocks, actual numbers on a bank account? Would stock market influence their cash position? Yeah, this is not stock, right? This is cash or cash equivalent. So this is usually like stuff, cash in the bank account or cash in like US treasuries, right? Just like stuff that is super safe, right? That's what basically cash and cash equivalents are. All right, Sun Fam says, how do you keep calm in any situation in general? Yeah, so this is something I've been talking to my wife about, because my wife tends to be a bit more reactionary, a bit more emotional, and I tend to kind of like take a step back. And I keep on telling my wife, this is kind of one of my secrets to keeping calm and level-headed is, if I feel anxious, if I feel like scared, if I feel like tension in my kind of mind, and I feel all these emotions that are overtaking me, hypothetically, then rather than pointing the finger outside and pointing it at somebody, at some company, at some entity, at some situation, some event, rather than doing that, I try to point the finger back and I say, what is it about this that I'm not seeing clearly, right? Why is it that something I'm not seeing is making me feel this way, right? So the problem isn't external, the problem is internal, it's my mind. I'm not seeing things clearly. I'm not seeing the truth behind the situation. That's why I have a certain amount of emotions that are overtaking, right? Kind of my feelings or my decision-making process. So I always ask myself, I take a step back and I go, wait a minute, what's going on? What am I not seeing? How can I see things clearly? And with that start of those questions, then I'm able to kind of pry things open and look deeper and kind of find answers and insights, right, that help me to understand the situation. All right, any thoughts about Berkshire? Maybe the best chance ever or going to be a big disaster? Yeah, I think probably, you know, it's neither. Like Berkshire, they're very like, they're probably one of the most like safest companies out there. They just have like so much cash. They have so many just like stable type of businesses, right? They have Geico, they have like railways, you know, energy companies. Like Berkshire is like a fortress, right, in a sense. That's how Warren Buffett has built it. It's not a high growth machine in any way anymore. He's really built it for like pension funds, right, and people's retirements, right? And that's kind of like Berkshire's or Warren Buffett's approach. Panomano says, hey, is there any big player, Apple, Google, that could aggressively bid out to buy Tesla at this stage? Yeah, I think the big question is, first, I don't think Elon wants to be bought out, right? He enjoys the independence. He thinks Tesla will have a better chance at reaching their mission by being independent, and he has access to capital. Especially, look, at Tesla's at $150 billion, right? It's even high for Elon standards, right? So he could raise money. If Elon wanted to raise $10 billion or $20 billion, he could do it, right, to fund growth. And it's not an issue, right? It would be minimal dilution compared to like selling out your entire company. So I think the best time though was Tesla last year around this time, right? In April or so, Tesla was under $200. And I was like, man, these companies, like they really ought to spend like, you know, like if Tesla is like, what, $50 billion in market cap or something, hey, VW, just spend $10 billion, man, and buy 20% of Tesla, right? When Tesla's at $50, right? You could do it in the open market, or you could do it through like option calls, right? Long-dated option calls, or anyway. Google and Apple, too, they could buy 10, 20% of Tesla, right? And I think a lot of it is just, a lot of these companies are, they just are boxed in, right, with, you know, their current type of ways, and they don't see when Tesla's at $50 billion, like, hey, we can get 20% of this mega company. So I think, yeah, they missed their opportunity, and personally, I don't even think they see opportunity, and that's one of the reasons why they probably don't look at it aggressively. All right, if you had only three stocks to buy today, what would they be? Yeah, this is a good question. Someone else was asking, if you couldn't invest in Tesla, what three stocks would you invest in, or what would you go all in? And I was thinking about that. Okay, I sold all my Tesla today, hypothetically, and I have to reinvest, let's say, all the money into three stocks, or reinvest in something. I actually personally, and this is just my personal opinion, my personal approach, I would take the cash, and I would actually just be spending a lot of time looking into great opportunities. And I wouldn't limit myself actually to the stock market. I would go outside and look into business opportunities, business ventures. I would look into, you know, just lots of different things out there. And I would actually expand my horizon. And I would actually probably start a bunch of ventures, bunch of businesses, right? Hire people to do certain things. And I would continue my research. I would trust the process. I think kind of the whole thing is, if I don't have a company that I'm, you know, a big bull in, then I trust the process. Right now, I've got about 10 or 15 companies that I thought had some potential, and then I invested in an exploratory position in all these companies about a month ago. So I'll do another video kind of on those 10 or 15 companies, why I invested in certain of those companies. And I would probably start investing more and more into those 10 or 15 companies, right? And I would probably, as I research more, some of those companies would have a bigger and bigger stake. And also personally, yeah, it's I would probably, you know, lean to more of the higher reward stocks as well. So if I had to pick three though today, this is not for anyone's consumption or anyone's advice. This is my own type of thinking, you know, off the top of my head. But yeah, I would probably divide it up into I'd probably hold cash, actually, to tell you the truth, and probably put a third into action right now, and I probably would wait for a third to do more. So I'm punting that for now, and hopefully I'll get into some of the more stocks that I've bought into. All right, Marty T says, why do mainstream news agencies love to spread misinformation about Tesla? Yeah, I think it's different. I don't think these news agencies are particularly malicious against, you know, certain companies. I think that it's the bias of individual reporters usually, right? And these individual reporters tend to be influenced heavily by media, by different stuff. And you have a lot of just FUD going around with not just Tesla, but with a lot of things, right? And it's interesting. It seems like society in a way is becoming a little bit more like ideological or fundamental, or like there seems to be a war on the mind that's going on, right? And it's feeding into kind of news and information, and these reporters are very susceptible to that. And I think a large part of it is look at the reporters, and you'll notice like some reporters are just really biased. Min says, what percentage of cash do you have on hand? I have less than 10% cash on hand, but my 10% is quite large, considering, you know, like I've been invested, right, in stocks for a long time, and I've started my own business, was able to take those profits, invest it. And so, you know, a 5 or 10% cash position for me is actually the largest cash position I've had. And it could, I could buy quite a bit of stuff, actually. All right, guys, it's already about 40 minutes. So I'm gonna go ahead and close up today's live stream. If you haven't subscribed to my channel, I encourage you to do so. We're talking about, you know, investment topics, but, you know, topics around the world. We're looking at it from different angles. I think that's the key, right? We're trying to reform our mind rather than taking these quick kind of shallow judgment reactions. We're trying to go deeper, exercise independent thinking, right? Critical thinking, look at things from a broader view, from a more long-term view. And by doing that and seeing clarity, we're going to hopefully, you know, find better investment opportunities, but also we hope that will, you know, bear a lot of fruit and a lot of rewards in all areas of our life. So go ahead, also like the video. Without your likes, this video has very little chance of spreading. That's how the YouTube world works. So if you have watched it to this far, please like it, and that gives the video a chance, right, for other people to watch it. And go ahead and comment after the video also, and we'll see you guys in the next video. Have a great weekend. All right, bye.